Welcome to Chasing the Word on Compassion Radio.
Sandy, I am very excited to be starting something new with you this week.
It is exciting to see what's going to happen.
We've done this series, we call it Chasing the Word, for the whole year past.
And we finished up with Paul in house arrest in Rome. We felt like we were in house arrest in a lot of times during the pandemic of 2020.
The story we're going to begin this week is like exactly the opposite. We're going to study the life of a man that is the flip side of the coin from Paul.
Right. I think this book of the Bible that we're going to be studying is his end of life story, as the book of Acts is a reflection back of Paul's story. The thoughts of this man seem to be tormented by his thoughts from the end of his life.
The way the two men ended up is markedly different, and yet they're both considered key men in God's story.
Right.
They're in the Bible. Their legacies and their life, both of them, loom very large in the Scriptures.
Right.
We're going to study the book of Ecclesiastes for the next few weeks. Mm-hmm. Like I say, I can't think of a more seemingly opposite take on life. Right. The end of the story for Ecclesiastes, as we all kind of know, is a man who had everything the world could offer and still felt impoverished.
Right.
Still felt trapped. He felt isolated. Friends, consider those two stories as we begin this series, because we're living in a time where we could choose to remain within ourselves trapped or within God's story unleashed.
Right.
We do want this, by the way, to be something that is timeless, but at the same time, a timely study, so that the things we're going through, we'll discuss them, which includes the story of the coronavirus and those issues the world's facing right now. And we need to be mindful of the fact that history often repeats itself. We get told that story many times
over
in this book.
Yes.
Let's, if we can, honey, begin the story by discussing what our principles of the study are going to be.
We will be confronted with wisdom over and over. King Solomon, we think, wrote the book of Ecclesiastes, or dictated.
Honey, we know that Solomon was known for being the wisest man that ever lived. That's his common title as people read the books and have known him from popular culture. But there's a story behind that of how he arrived at not just the reputation, but in the actual possession of such wisdom that's really unique in the Scriptures.
Well, we read in 1 Kings, in the days before he's crowned as king, God visits him in a dream, and he says to him, "Ask, what should I give you?" And this is in 1 Kings 3. And Solomon replied, "You have shown great and faithful love to your servant, my father David, because he walked before you in faithfulness, righteousness, and integrity. You have continued this great and faithful love for him by giving him a son to sit on his throne, as it is today. Lord my God, you have now made your servant king in my father David's place. Yet I am just a youth with no experience in leadership. Your servant is among your people. You have chosen a people too numerous to be numbered or counted. So please give your servant an obedient heart to judge your people and to discern between good and evil. For who is able to judge this great people of yours?" And this request pleased the Lord. So God said to him, "Because you have requested this and did not ask for a long life or riches or death of your enemies, but you asked for discernment to understand justice, I will do what you have asked. I will give you a wise and understanding heart."
Scriptures afterwards, it also says that God gave him most of the other things kings would normally ask for. Interesting side note we should remind ourselves about is that Solomon had every right to be angry with David. After all, he's the product of a scandal.
Yeah.
He is the son of Bathsheba. And Bathsheba, of course, gets a bad rap because she wasn't the one at fault. David was.
Absolutely.
And David's reputation took a huge hit. And yet Solomon, in his statement to God, says, "My father has shown integrity." That's a lot of respect and humility for a man that didn't have a lot of respect within his own family. Another important part of the story is to remember that Solomon is not the oldest son. His older brother died in infancy. And the scriptures say as a direct punishment to David for his presumption, for his taking of another man's wife. Solomon knows that God's mercies can be severe.
Right.
And I'm sure he heard the story over the years about how David pled for his brother and it didn't happen. He's got a healthy respect and fear of God, I'm sure of that, when he asks this request of God. But the story we're going to read is not the young man who's coming into his discovery of wisdom and knowledge and coming into his powers. It's the old man looking back saying, "What did it all mean?" So, honey, in light of all that, let's talk about the three principles for how we're going to study the book of Ecclesiastes.
Every week, we'll have a similar format of how we approach the scripture. And in the first part of our conversation, we'll talk about the scripture itself and what Ecclesiastes is saying.
And we'll use some of the traditional translations.
Translations, exactly.
So the familiar words that we're used to hearing.
And we'll give you a list of resources that you can look up online to get a deeper understanding of the story of Ecclesiastes and possibly to learn more about King Solomon himself. After that, we will talk about the modern translations of Ecclesiastes and what that looks like in more modern day language. And we'll talk about how it relates to us in our modern vernacular. Yeah. We'll do that through work that Bram has done in reading the original Hebrew translations and then bringing that into a more modern scope of language for us to understand. This is not all about Solomon or not all about the king who's writing this, yeah. But God has a story in this as well. And God has some real wisdom for us to glean as we read through Ecclesiastes.
Not just from what the king says, but from how the king responds.
Exactly.
So I do believe that the Lord himself is going to lead us through the study to understand not just the king's heart and not just how we might find ourselves in similar situations as the king, but we're going to discover along the way what God's heart is when we're in these places, when we are going through these, what did my life add up to? Will fools always prevail? All those kind of biting questions that come back to rob us of our joy, mm-hmm. especially at the times when the world tells us you should be enjoying your retirement.
Right. We'll find that the king talks a lot about the things that he did, the things that he experienced, the things that he pursued, and then get to the end of that and how futile it felt to him. Mm-hmm. So if you're ready,
I'm ready to
jump into the book of Ecclesiastes.
To start this, we'll be reading from traditional styled translations, the Holman Christian Standard Bible.
Ecclesiastes chapter 1. The words of the teacher, son of David, king in Jerusalem. Absolute futility, says the teacher. Absolute futility. Everything is futile. What does a man gain for all his efforts that he labors at under the sun? A generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises and the sun sets. Panting, it returns to its place where it rises. Gusting to the south, turning to the north, turning, turning goes the wind, and the wind returns in its cycles. All the streams flow to the sea, yet the sea is never full. The streams are flowing to the place, and they flow there again. All things are wearisome. Man is unable to speak. The eye is not satisfied by seeing, or the ear filled with hearing. What has been is what will be, and what has been done is what will be done. There is nothing new under the sun. Can one say about anything, look, this is new? It has already existed in the ages before us. There is no remembrance of those who came before and of those who will come after. There will also be no remembrance by those who follow them. I, the teacher, have been king over Israel in Jerusalem. I applied my mind to seek and explore through wisdom all that is done under heaven. God has given people this miserable task to keep them occupied. I have seen all the things that are done under the sun and have found everything to be futile, a pursuit of the wind. What is crooked cannot be straightened. What is lacking cannot be counted. I said to myself, look, I have amassed wisdom far beyond all those who were over Jerusalem before me, and my mind has thoroughly grasped wisdom and knowledge. I applied my mind to know wisdom and knowledge, madness and folly. I learned that this, too, is a pursuit of the wind. For with much wisdom is much sorrow. As knowledge increases, grief also increases. This is a very sad tale.
It's a lament. Mm. And I think the entire book, in some ways, is a lament, because it never relents in its lament.
Yes.
New layers of disappointment. What's the first impression you get from reading this in a traditional sense?
There's not a lot of hope in this. Hmm. There's not anything to look forward to. And we read this story and we see that this man is maybe at the end of his life and he gives us no hope for our future, those of us that are younger than him. And I look at this and I say, that's so sad to me that you can't look back at a life that was well lived. There was a lot of excess in King Solomon's life, if he is in fact the writer of this. But there's not a lot of joy in that, even just the first chapter. I see he's stuck in a rut.
The two words that seem to be missing from the vernacular here is gratitude and joy.
Exactly.
There's none of that that seems evident in this first chapter. And it may be a rhetorical device to get us thinking hard about questions and then answer them. But having read the book a few times, we don't get that relief.
No.
You know, we don't go on to chapter 7 and it suddenly turns a corner. Mm-hmm. Like we think Job's life turned a corner and he got back everything he lost. He didn't really. But in the case of Solomon, he's maybe even comparing himself to Job, thinking maybe Job had it better than I had. Mm. Because at least he got something out of it at the end of his life. there's something about a despair. And when you said, this is what the word's saying, that there is no hope, we're taking the king at his word mm-hmm. when we read it that way. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that God is trying to tell us that what the king is saying is what is true.
Well, no, it's not what is true. It's the impression that you get from reading what Solomon says.
Right. And if we take him at his word, the wisest man who ever lived, and we accept his word as authority in our lives, honey, I think we're really missing the authority that's really in this word. Mm. I think God is exposing the king and allowing him to expose himself for how bitter he has become. Yeah. I don't think God intends for us to become this.
Well, no, I don't think so either.
That's not a rhetorical way of answering that thing. I think it's something we really need to consider. There are a lot of people that, oh, well, if that's what the king says, that's the way it goes. Mm-hmm. And we treat our politics, we treat our culture, we treat our heroes the same way. Mm-hmm. Well, if they're doing it, so what? I guess it's not the big deal anymore.
I think it's a difference between the glasses half empty and the glasses half full kind of people. I tend to be the glasses half empty kind of person. Yeah. And I tend to see the darker side of things more often than not. And I'm grateful to God for your positive attitude so many times when I'm like, oh, I'm such despair. We tend to say that I'm kind of an Eeyore personality. Those of you that are familiar with Winnie the Pooh stories, that I just can't believe that this is happening and how are we going to get out of this mess? And that may be where Solomon is right now. The king may be feeling like, well, nothing's working, nothing's making me happy anymore. But we see, too, that he has spent his life on excess. And honestly, folks, if you spend your life on excess without the grateful component of that in your life, it does seem futile because it takes more and more and more to get you excited about something, to get you happy.
Solomon walked into this eyes wide shut. He prayed his prayer to God. God gave him his wisdom, but also gave him all these other things. Mm-hmm. And I don't think God gave the things because he wanted him to be coddled. I think God gave him these other things to test him, to see whether or not his wisdom could apply to himself. Can he discern what a genuine spiritual test is? And can he respond to it in a way that a wise person does? Not just a person who possesses wisdom, mm-hmm. but a wise person. Mm-hmm. And I do believe there's a difference between the two. Mm-hmm. I've known many wise people who can't say profound things, but they just live with a depth of gratitude and simplicity and faith that is unassailable. Their life may have had lots of hurts and a grindingness to it that is difficult, but there's something about the core of the person that you just can't help but admire. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I see that in the life of Solomon at this point.
Right, right.
And that is the conclusion of the chapter one from our traditional perspective. But I do want to turn after the break here and talk about how we could view it with new eyes.
Right.
We'll be back with part two of the study on Ecclesiastes 1 in just a moment. And I hope you're not forgetting your brothers and sisters around the world that are battling coronavirus and the panic it brings, just like you are. And I'm thrilled that you continue to partner with us in times like this. This unusual media ministry that we are, bringing you the frontline kingdom news you probably won't hear much about anywhere else. Thank you for how your courage and faithful giving keep us on the air, in the arena, standing with you to help the kingdom keep growing in the 21st century. Here's how. Just visit our website, CompassionRadio.com, or call our toll-free order line, 1-800-868-2478. Our mailing address is Compassion Radio, P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. Reach out to us whatever way works for you. As mentioned earlier, make sure to get a free copy of our new study guide on Ecclesiastes. There's a download link right there on today's podcast page at CompassionRadio.com. There are challenging questions and lively commentary, along with a brand new edition of this book of the Bible, released each week, chapter by chapter. It's all free for the taking, so please stop by today. And now back to our discussion.
Honey, we're back for a second look now at Ecclesiastes 1. We're going to read through it pretty quickly in a modern translation and then do some of the takeaways from this study about what the king could have, what he should have learned, and I think what God's trying to tell us even today. Mm-hmm. Here is Ecclesiastes 1 in more modern language. These sayings were spoken by the great teacher himself, the son of David and king in Jerusalem. Futile, futile, says the teacher. It's all just so futile. What can it possibly advantage a man to keep working when it never stops? It's all sweat and sunburn. Generation after generation, the earth just keeps grinding along, and the work never lets up. The god, more radiant than the sun, sets it burning in the sky, while we gasp. Up and down it goes, every day. Then the wind, first from the north, then from the south, round and round, back and forth, everywhere you turn is in your face. Every brook, stream, and river keeps pouring itself out into the sea. No matter how much it drinks, it is never satisfied, yet the rivers keep trying. And words, they're just the same. No matter how many spill out of us, no matter how weary we are of them, they just keep coming. Men and women, all they do is talk, 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 and never get to the bottom of anything. We seek ourselves blind, we talk ourselves deaf. What is to become of ourselves? Just the same old, same old. Nothing ever changes. The world's stuck on repeat. As sure as the sun rises and sets, it'll just be more of the same. Seriously, have you ever seen anything in this world that you can honestly say is completely original? Look around you. We're all just doing what we've always done. Look as far as daylight will take you, and you won't find anything novel under the sun. Even worse, those who did it first aren't even remembered. We just keep mindlessly repeating what others set in motion, and we won't be remembered for doing it. Hear me! I, the teacher, became king over all Israel here in Jerusalem. I threw myself into the pursuit of all wisdom that was to be found. I chased knowledge, insight, and wisdom with a passion. I searched for it wherever it was to be found under heaven. I deconstructed the very act of work in my pursuit and studied all the ways men work hard for a living. Turns out it's practically evil how hard men have to work just to get by. God uses it to humble men. I saw all the ways men work and get worked over. It's amazing how futile it all is. No matter how hard you grasp, it slips through your fingers. No matter how fast you run, you fall behind. It's insane. Once life has contorted you in strange ways, you can't seem to straighten yourself out. You can't even count all the ways you seem to lack what you need. And there I was, taking it all in. I acknowledged that my situation was quite different. I had everything that I needed. More than that, I had wisdom and the capacity to pursue it to my heart's desire. I did just that from my palace in Jerusalem. No king before me had such wealth, insight, and wisdom as I. I even gave myself over to partying till I was wasted, just to test the bounds of pleasure. Oh yes, that turned out to be a total waste. I was more frustrated than ever. I gained more wisdom from the experience, but it just added grief to my growing anxiety. I figured more of this knowledge would just lead to more pain. If you want more of one, you'll certainly get more of the other. Mm. Like we talked about in the last segment, I think we're left with exasperation, but kind of a judgment that Solomon thinks he's got it nailed down. Mm-hmm. It's not hopeful, as you mentioned, but he thinks he's got it understood. I would challenge that. I would say he got it all wrong.
It sounds like he's just giving up in some ways. The more I increase my knowledge and wisdom, the more pain there is. So I'm done with that. I'm not going to go there.
And it's kind of spiteful, too. Mm-hmm. You know, I had all this, didn't work out. Good luck with yours, buddy.
Right.
You would think that somebody who has been in questioning mode would look around and say, how could I find answers to the hope that seems to be lacking? Mm-hmm. He doesn't seem to be asking anybody for anything.
Yeah.
It's like he's angry at God and assuming that nobody could possibly be offering him anything because he's the wisest one. Mm-hmm. He's in a spiteful mode.
Yeah, there's not a lot of humility in him at this point either, it wouldn't seem.
There's a lot of things that we took notes on that we have made available in a study guide on Ecclesiastes, starting with chapter 1. We're going to have that available as a download from our podcast page. Just go there and look it up. Mm-hmm. You're welcome to download it free anytime and study further on this. And there are lots of lessons that he should have learned. I'll just highlight a couple of things. First of all, the wisdom of God is not like man's. No matter what Solomon thought.
Right.
We need to be willing to learn to live with mystery.
Absolutely. It's very clear in Scripture how God says his ways are not the same as our ways. His thoughts are not our thoughts. He has plans that we don't know about, but they're for our future and our hope. So we can trust God that he's got an eye on things, even when we don't understand. And if we live our lives with the thought that we deserve to understand and know everything that's going on, we miss so much of learning to trust and walk in faith. And that's difficult for many people. I will raise my hand with that group and say, it is difficult for me to walk in faith. Mm. There are many things that we encounter in our lives that will test that. And will bring us to a place of exasperation if we don't learn to just allow ourselves to live with mystery.
And the whole point of this book is that there's more than one set of eyes on this situation. Mm-hmm. This is not one man sitting alone in his room scribbling the musings of a madman.
Yeah.
This is a collaborative effort. God himself is inspiring the king to say these things out loud enough that someone could record them and write them down for posterity.
Right.
This is thousands of years ago. This man sat around moaning about this.
Yes,
he wasn't even really thinking deeply. He was just venting.
Right.
And yet there it is. So the other lesson I think he could have learned that we need to learn now is that we're not alone in our labor.
Right.
Now, in the case of Solomon, he's not a laborer in the field where his muscles make his living.
Mm-hmm.
He's laboring and sweating out the details of a deep thought life, but one that wasn't going deep enough.
Right.
He was just at a dead end.
Mm-hmm.
And for those of us who have to work with our hands or do a job or a skill, you know, we're kind of a mix of that. We deal with ideas and spiritual questions here on this program, but we actually do a lot of the work to get the program on the air. We don't just turn over our talking to somebody else and make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
We have to be intimately involved with the production
right.
and the delivery and the writing and the production of those things. We are of both worlds. We are of the mind and the heart and the spirit, but we're also of our hands and our clock and deadlines.
Mm-hmm.
All those things apply to us. So I can relate to both. But in being not alone in our labor, we have to remember that we're not abandoned. He pursues us, but he's immovable at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
We are not abandoned in our labors.
Solomon seemed to focus on himself, turning inward during this time, focusing on his inward thoughts and his inward moanings, as you called them. We need to look outside ourselves and see God's bigger purpose in the world around us.
Yeah.
Ours isn't the only story that's going on in this world of how many billion people.
We started at the beginning of this program talking about the contrast between the life of Paul and the life of Solomon.
Exactly.
Paul races towards the glorious future he has envisioned already, has been prophesied over him. And that glorious future is to give his life for others in chains.
Mm-hmm.
The glory of God was for Paul to be squashed.
One of the things I love so much about what we do here at Compassion Radio is bringing stories of what God is doing around the world to the listeners here in America. That gives us a bigger picture of God's story, and we can look outside ourselves and see God's bigger purpose for our lives, even.
Right.
Whether we go, whether we send, whether we stay home, whether we pray, whatever it is that God's called us to do, that we do it with abandon as a focus on God's bigger picture. Whether we are stuck at home right now, not knowing what to do, I think we talked about this in one of our broadcasts. Write notes to people. Send them an email. Send them a card through the actual mail with a stamp on it. Do those things as an outward expression of God's purpose in the world. I don't see that that's what the writer of Ecclesiastes was doing. He was so inwardly focused that he lost sight of God's bigger purpose in the world.
And we benefit from that because we get to see how it can go so wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, pick up lots of individual bits of wisdom embedded within all of this lament.
These little verses are on plaques all over the place.
Out of its context, they're beautiful things.
Right.
And they are beautiful things that need to be put into a new context.
Right.
Last point for this, because we're going to see this metaphor appear time after time throughout this book, the wind.
Mm-hmm.
Solomon complains about not being able to catch it. He complains about it blowing in his face. He complains about not being able to understand it or able to see it or make it explain itself. It just absolutely blows his mind that he's so impotent in the face of something as simple as the wind.
Well, he's a powerful man.
The wind is a stand-in, I'm sure of this, for the spirit of the living God.
Right.
Everything that Solomon seems to be struggling with or complaining about is the wind.
Mm.
Of course we're not going to catch it. Of course we're not going to steer it where we want it to go. The wind's going to go where it wants to go. For Jesus, the wind was always with him because he was going where the wind was going.
Mm.
His sails were full, given energy by the wind.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like Solomon is fighting the wind every step of the way
and
doesn't realize how much he's fighting against the spirit of the living God. There are certain things that are just not controllable in life.
Mm-hmm.
Number one among them is God himself.
I don't want to be obstinate against God's spirit. I want to be willing to let it flow in and out, have it to take me where he calls me to go. And that's difficult when you are a person who wants to know the outcome.
One of the Chronicles of Narnia, the horse and his boy,
mm-hmm.
there's a whole scene in there where overnight they're being chased by a lion and they run like the wind. And everywhere they go, it seems like a lion keeps nipping at their heels. They're exhausted. Their horses they're riding on are exhausted. By the time day breaks, they've collapsed on a field. They can't go any farther. They've been terrorized the entire night. And by the end of the book, they discover that the great lion was the one that was chasing them.
Mm.
Aslan himself, roaring as he went along to chase them to safety,
mm-hmm.
to chase them into Narnia. God did that to them through a storm of fear and yet rescue them because of it. How many of the storms that we're facing right now seem like they're just blowing full force in our face, mm-hmm. whether economic, spiritual, the fear of the sickness? If we face those storms as if every storm is the same, God may choose to use one of those storms for his purposes.
Mm-hmm. I'm reminded, too, of the story of Jonah. God blew him to a place to speak to him. So I just want to encourage those who are listening today, let the wind of the Spirit of God take you where it will, with confidence that God has a bigger purpose in your life because of it.
And for others that need you. Mm-hmm. So I would say that's our final word for this first chapter of Ecclesiastes. Be the ones that will follow him in times like this. Mm-hmm. If God has enabled you to support his kingdom purposes, please give generously where you hear God's word preached, celebrated, and lived. We need you, and we thank you for everything that you do and every prayer you offer on our behalf. Let us know you're standing with us and that you're chasing the word together with us. When you call or write us today with your tax-free gift, make sure to ask for Michael O'Brien's brand new music project, Crown Him, available on CD or for digital download. Our toll-free number is 1-800-868-2478. Our mailing address is P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. And you can find us 24/7 at our website, CompassionRadio.com. We'll see you tomorrow.